necessary. Pictures and buttons.
Welcome back. I'm Quinta.
I am Peta. Hello. Happy New Year.
You're listening. You're back here at the Black Staring Place, our little podcast here. How are you, Peta?
Of the internet. I'm good, Quinta. How are you?
Good. How was your Happy New Year at 9 o'clock p.m.?
Hey, should I tell you we lit a candle? Did we light a candle? As I told, no, we didn't light a candle. It was super low key. I was with my best friend, Cheche, with one of my favorite people in the universe. We napped.
That's how you do it.
Had some bubbles. Found a movie to watch. Had a good chat, man. It was very low key. Usually we'd be at Afropunk doing this, that, or the other debaucherous thing. But yeah, it was pretty low key.
Low key, it was.
Yeah. How's it for
okay,
you?
Okay, cool. It was really low-key, but, like, I like my things low-key anyway, so it didn't feel like a departure.
Okay.
It didn't feel like a departure from my usual Friday nights.
I mean, it makes me feel a little bit bad, because I'm like, extra with the Sara extra.
I stayed in, and I actually passed out during the countdown. But we made it to 2021. Today we're looking at
I May Destroy You.
I May Destroy You. Yes, I may destroy your idea of consent. Yes,
I may destroy your sanity level. I may destroy
your thing.
I may destroy your relationship. Really, Michaela Cole made, wrote, produced, starred in this show that destroyed a lot of things.
Educated a lot of things too and people.
Debatably one of the best shows from 2020.
It was one of my best shows.
Yeah, definitely one of my best shows. And this episode is recorded over Zoom. It's one of the earlier ones that we did when we were still in the birthing phase.
And can you imagine, we were actually, this was first year lockdown that we recorded.
Yeah,
this,
like this. Level four.
Now we're in the second lockdown.
Yeah, we're like level four of the
alarming level of three. The second wave.
Okay,
cool. Yay, let's get into it.
Let us do it.
Dope.
The Black Staring is a podcast where we ask, where are the Black women on our screens? Where are the Black queer women? Where are the Black trans women? Where are the Black fat women?
Absolutely. We use our very own couch potatoes of color test based on a criteria to hold all the shows we love and hate accountable. We're basically asking, do Black women pander to the slightest stereotypes? Is there at least one strong relationship between Black women not fueled by a romantic situation of one of them? How are different types of Black women and bodies represented in relation to one another? We are the Africans and the queers. Are Black women given the space to express a full range of emotion?
Yeah. With that, we then rate the shows, potato style, starting from the bottom with smashed potatoes for anything that's terrible beyond redemption, mashed potatoes for something that's bad with some redemption, roast potatoes for something that's good and puts in the work, and fries for intersectional Black excellence. A short disclaimer here, these are our own views. They don't represent anyone other than ourselves, not our employers, not our friends, family. They're just our own views. Now let's get into this week's pick.
Don't mind if I do. So today we have chosen something that has captured our imagination for being relatable and visceral and all kinds of things. It is I May Destroy You by the amazing Michaela Cole. It's an HBO BBC run show. Very different to her previous work in Chewing Gum. But we really love the way that she made Black women full characters, weird, funny, terrible. It's everything, everything and more.
This show really, it's like, yeah, she's the destroyer and the finisher in the show. It deals with consent on the face of it, but I think it's more, a whole lot more about the nature of trauma as an experience that is as much out of the body as it is in the body, and just like how severed it is in the flashbacks. And you know, she tells the story, she unpacks that experience so well. So we're unpacking themes around PTSD, sexual violence, and what is clearly a gray area in society when it comes to consent.
Yeah, and much like the real world, consent is not spoken about enough. It's very tricky to navigate. There's so much gray around it. But if you haven't seen it, I May Destroy You is based on Michaela Cole's own date rape ordeal that she suffered a few years ago. She plays Arabella, who is a Twitter famous writer that is later date raped by a stranger on a night out with one of her good friends, Simon. And, you know, we see her coming back from Italy, and she was on what was supposed to be a writer's retreat when in actuality she was there with her maybe sort of kind of boyfriend. And she gets back to London, which where the bulk of the series is situated. And she then is trying to meet a deadline, but ends up going out with an old friend, Simon. It's supposed to be for an hour, and then everything kind of is a roller coaster from there as she starts getting flashbacks into what happened the night before, and she's not sure, is it true, is it not true, how drunk was I, what happened?
And it's so funny, I watched it again, and that first episode when she decides to give in to Simon's nagging her to come out, and how we see, you know, just that whole situation where, you know, she's with her friend, but she's also with people that she doesn't know, and how it's all like, there's this just laissez-faire feeling around strangers and new friends. There's even a toast that the guy, Simon's friend, makes to friends, strangers and people we've never seen before, and you actually see the freaking rapist. Yeah. Like, he's right there in the mix. You see him serving her, the whole situation was mapped out. They give them the drinks, and then from there on, it's like, you know, they sit there and lurk and wait for the first girl, I think, to lahla, you know.
Yeah, and it's such a tricky thing because, you know, we love to go out. I mean, I love to be out in the streets and just to dance and, you know, have a good time with friends. But there's always such a level of safety that you need to be concerned about as a woman. And, you know, there are all these things that you are told, like, don't accept a drink from strangers. You always have to watch, have a friend go with you, and they all these things that we're told to do. And, you know, sometimes the worst thing, what is supposed to be a good night out, ends up being the absolute worst experience of your life. And I mean, it's so hard to form, because women often, we always have to think about the way that we navigate space and have to avoid danger as women. How are you dressed? How are you talking? How are you moving? You know, and, you know, in a South African context, it's even worse with our rape statistics and all that kind of thing inside. So I definitely related to Arabella's sense of just wanting to be out, but also just having to watch what you do. What did you think, Quinta?
I mean, you know, it definitely just is scary. Like, I just, throughout that whole scene and the first, just throughout the series, it's just this feeling of how unsafe, how dangerous a place the world is for women, and how it's an act of bravery to be yourself and to be free out there. Because, like, I know I'm, like, shit scared. I know I'm shit scared when I have to consciously watch my drink. I have to consciously watch who's around me. And it's being the friend being the friend that's like having to take care of of the one that's brave and has and is living their life. I'm usually that guy. I'm usually the Terry.
I mean, let's talk about Terry.
Yeah. Let's talk about Terry. Terry, you so many mixed feelings about Terry.
Yeah, I
enjoy the whole friendship dynamic with Kwame. You know, here you have three completely different people who complement and mirror each other in such endearing ways, but there is some bad behavior, and there is just like a sense that Terry's loyalties have a limit. You know, like in Italy, when they have drugs and they both decide to go on a drug binging, drinking, partying spree, but she pulls out of the whole thing in the middle of the night. She just leaves her friend, her high as fuck friend, in the club, and just like leaves. You know, and then fast forward to the whole to Simon asking her if she should also just like why the both of them, like friendship here is just weird. It's just like it just shows you that there is a limit to people's loyalty and how far people will go for you, and for me that's like such an area of unsafety when it comes to friendship. Like it's like a weird gray area, you know?
Yeah, I mean, what is the level of accountability that we give to our friends? Because friendship is a kind of social contract. And, you know, you said you were Terry. I've also been Terry and been the friend who takes care of other friends who are more drunk. And, you know, sometimes you're Arabella as well and you just want to have a good time and people take care of you. But then in that situation, who's responsible? Is it the person who let themselves get that drunk? Is it the friend's responsibility to stay with them? I don't know. It's such a complicated thing. And you see them trying to course correct their errors within their friendships, which I guess is what a lot of us do when you end up talking to your friend and being like, hey, I didn't like this. But with Terry and Arabella, they never actually addressed that. They never really addressed that Terry told Simon that he could leave her there, and then she ended up getting raped. She's just very easy to forgive in a way that Kwame is not, because, you know, Arabella's a victim. But then when their friend Kwame gets raped, her sympathy is like, oh, I don't know. It's just everything gets gray again. And are some victims better than others? Why are some people given the grace of dodging the question about consent in and of itself? It's just like a lot of things that are at play. And also the way that we expect people who are talented to be morally righteous or like do the right thing. You think of the Zayn character as well in episode 5, where she exposes him for stalking, which is what happens when you're having sex with someone and a condom.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah, it's called stealthing. So it's when the condom is removed without consent. And, you know,
Zane
is a writer from Cambridge who's supposed to help her finish her book, and they end up getting involved. And then halfway through sex, he removes the condom and doesn't tell her. And afterwards, when she's looking for it, he's like, oh no, I took it off. Like, didn't you feel that it wasn't there? And she doesn't realize. I mean, they go to get the morning after pill, but it's only when she's listening to a podcast the next day where they're talking about how this is considered a form of rape that she's like, wait a minute, was I raped?
And it just
again happened to me again. And but now, you know, he's this celebrated guy and everybody loves him, and now they're supposed to speak at this event together. And how do you deal with the person who raped you, with the person who violated you on an everyday basis? Because that's also something that a lot of people have to deal with.
The level of, I find myself saying gaslighting like every day now, like the level of gaslighting here. And it's like, For me, it was that moment when she figured, she, you know, like when he tells her that, oh, he does that whole thing where he's like, I thought you felt that I took it off. But even in that moment, how she doesn't, you know, she knows there's something wrong. It's very similar to the Aziz Ansari situation where the girl kept, you know, where the girl didn't know what was happening, but it was played off as, you know, oh, just by the way, like, oh, this is what's happening. And, oh, aren't you okay with it? I just asked you if I can, like, go down on you. Oh, okay, fine. And it's like, there's such a subtle violence in that, and taking someone's agency away and then throwing back this, like, yeah, trash nonsense.
And that, like, that, like, almost stupefied, like, oh, what do you mean? You know, almost like playing dumb. And there is a level of coercion that happens more often than it should. And you see it in the show, and people talk about it a lot in real life, where women kind of just go along with a situation. And I remember watching a Grapevine video where they were discussing the Aziz Ansari situation. And one of the people said, it's very difficult to be the girl who is liked and the girl who says no. And a lot of the time, people end up choosing to be liked, so you just kind of go along with it, and a lot of fuck shit happens.
But is that a thing? Ooh, you know, when you say that, I think of it's a power dynamic, right? It's like it's a social power that someone like an Aziz Ansari and a Zayn Tazeen in the series, because he's like a hotshot writer, creative writer. He's also got such an arrogance about him. You know, like the type that old school writers would have. Some writers these days, I guess, do. But, like, you know, where you're just like, am I falling for this guy's power? You know, like, is he using his power to take him? Is he using his... Because, you know, Zayn sets himself up as someone smarter and better and almost, yeah, like, socially cultured, more cultured than Arabella. Yeah. You know, like, he's an educated erudite from Cambridge, wherever the hell he's from. And he sets himself up to Arabella this way. And kind of creates that power dynamic where anything he says, he's sort of an authority, you know. So if he comes through and says something like, you know, I thought you felt it, she's left asking herself, oh no, but this guy, he's like the smarter, he's Zayn, he's this writer, author, like, what am I thinking? He obviously knows what he's doing, but, like,
but he doesn't.
People take advantage.
And yeah, I think that's the thing. Like, there's so many ways that men rationalize violent behavior. And even if they are the smartest guy in the room, it doesn't mean that they are above being rapey or being an actual rapist.
Absolutely.
You know? And there's, like, I was thinking the other day a lot about how the show kind of presses on the idea of who commits, you know, the violent act? What do they look like? Where are they from? You know? And I was just thinking a lot about how people are always so concerned with what the girl was doing, what she was wearing, where was she going, but it's never in reverse. Like, what does a rapist look like? We always see,
right,
what a victim looks like, but what does a rapist actually look like? Because we have it in our heads that certain people fit the stereotypes and others don't. But more often than not, it's the guy that you know or that guy's friend. And it's these people that you interact with and you just don't know. It really could be anybody, whether they are wild,
yeah,
whether they are bum, it doesn't matter.
And it's such a crazy, like, it's like a dichotomy there, like a weird duality where the rape victim has to, like, she has to go through the system and be, you know, and try and try and get and give them all her clothes and go through, you know, this evidence finding type of situation. Like, she gives herself to the system to as evidence,
yeah,
as the crime scene. Like, hello, like, I'm the person who was raped.
A rape kit.
You can, you've got, yeah, but like, you can never. Even with all that evidence, you can never, we live in a society where it's impossible to believe, like it's not even impossible. We don't want to believe, we don't want to believe survivors. With all the evidence that there is, like, it'll always end in the air. And, you know, like, it's just, no one wants to believe that this woman who was drugged, who has bruises on her body, who has blood on her, who has someone else's DNA on her, was raped, and that, you know, surely someone didn't, and that we can find that person. I think she also does that quite well, is how she puts up that mirror to society of how ridiculous, yeah, it is when a woman is raped, and she really puts you into the mind of a person that's experiencing PTSD, you know, the piecing together of memory, the flashbacks, the obsessions, the hypervigilance. You know, she shows us how trauma alters her, alters reality in her choice to merge the real with the surreal. I mean, after all of that evidence finding and the system letting her down, for her to go back to Biagio is,
you know, you know what?
It's why. Why the hell does she do that?
I just, you know, I'm what? Still... I don't have her answers. I can tell you that this show is one that enjoys sitting in discomfort. And, like, there are a lot of areas where you feel uncomfortable watching it. Maybe because it's reflective. Maybe it's because it's just, she's talking about things that people don't show properly on screen. And when she goes back to Biagio, it's very odd because homegirl gets on a plane. She doesn't have money. She asks Terry for money. She gets on a plane. She doesn't have a bag. She doesn't have nothing. She goes all the way to a different country with no data plan. Gets to this guy's place.
Not a plan, bruh.
I got a plan. She gets to this guy's place, and he's not there. She decides to take the spare key. She lets herself in. She says she gets comfortable to the point that she even orders a pizza, and he comes in. And she's upset. And for me, it was very interesting because there's such a, the idea of consent is kind of continuous. And the way that we weight things is so different because as much as, you know, her consent was violated when she was raped, she also violated his consent to his personal space because she broke into his house. And then when he was like, why are you here? Then she was like, no, but like, why wouldn't I be here? And this is a guy who's also wild because he's a drug dealer, but also your lover. And then when she told him what happened, he was kind of, but why weren't you watching your drink? What were you doing? But then he's still her safe place. You know, she still finds a level of comfort in him that she doesn't find in anyone else. And it's just so weird that sometimes the person who does the worst thing to you can also help you. In some way, we see it with Zane, we see it with Biagio. Also, can we just talk about that period sex scene really quickly?
Oh, yeah,
real quick,
yeah,
because you don't see that.
You don't see that number, you don't see a lot of what happens here. You know, I was actually having a conversation with someone about how, like, this series is groundbreaking in the theme and how. Like, I'm actually yet to see a show that deals with rape and consent this way. It's so educational as well, you know. But that scene, for me, I was like, I'm not even disgusted. Like, there's this absurdity in how it happens and you know, but like I feel comfortable. There's just a sense of comfort that should be afforded, you know, like, and it's just a weird contrast to actually being raped or to the rape that is being dealt with in the series, to have this scene where she's being vulnerable.
It was soft.
Yeah, it was soft.
And she's being, you know, she's like, this guy is also quite vulnerable in the scene, the stranger that she falls in love with in Italy. Like,
and for me, that's also crazy because, you know, they wanted to get it on or whatever. And she said she's on her period. He's like, it's cool. But then also
it's cool.
There's a level of discomfort because I felt a little bit uncomfortable because I was like, yo, man, he really doesn't care. He's just going to...
He's literally right there with the plot.
Like, he's there with the blood clot. Like, playing, like curious. And I love that because there's such a level of disgust around menstruation that I hate. Mm. If you even think about the fact that we would smuggle pads and tampons to one another, like we were doing drugs, when it's just like, do you have a pad? I have a pad. Here's the pad. But everyone is like under blazers and, you know, and there's this
whole... The shame of having blotted yourself.
You know, there's a kind of disgust or like, you shouldn't talk about this. We all have code names. It's Tom. It's
rubbish.
You know, everyone has a name for their period instead of just saying they're on their period. And it's just so weird. So I really loved that they were just like...
Yeah, oh, have the candid frankness of, listen, period. It's and blood, it's a period, it's it is what it is.
She was more uncomfortable than he was, actually.
She was. And it's the internalized, internalized. Like, women, we've internalized that.
Exactly.
Almost disgust for our own bodies, even. Absolutely. You know, we've internalized that because of the fucking patriarchy. And to you know, like, what I enjoy mostly about that scene is just the realness of the fact that we can all, especially women, we've all seen that we understand the clot, the blood, we understand it, and as much as it may disgust us, it's off-putting, but just to feel like that humanity, like that there is actually what you think is disgusting is not there. It's not there. This guy is literally touching this, which, you know, it's a normal, it's normalizing the whole Twitter thing. Normalize a guy. Whole thing. You know, normalize a guy feeling your blood clot before sex. I mean, it's like, it's so, like the frankness of it, I was just like, also her being a girl and being like, oh, you're weird about this is just... she's constantly dancing, Michaela Cole, that is, she's constantly dancing around meaning, like, she's never, like, just, like,
which is so
sitting good. On a definition, exactly. I love that, like, I love how she's always...
Yeah, because for me, even the way she presses on why things are the way that they are, and for me, Kwame was also, the way that they dealt with Kwame was also... really interesting, you know, he is a gay man who, you know, he's a very good friend, way better friend than Terry. Anyway, Kwame, you know, he is always on Grindr, he's always hooking up with people, and then he ends up getting raped. And you contrast a man getting raped with a woman getting raped, and contrasting Arabella's experience in going to the police and them taking her seriously, going through the process with Kwame, where the cops were very dismissive, it was very homophobic, and they just didn't, there was a level of like, how are you as a man getting raped, you know?
Yeah.
Which is so strange.
And I think he was...
You don't think that there would be like this weird privilege in being believed as a woman, even though that
it's a crazy like game. The dark world of rape is that women are hardly ever believed, but we are more likely to accept the story of a rape victim who is a woman as opposed to a man. And I think he was humped. I don't know if he was, I don't know if that guy actually it doesn't matter, though. He was sexually assaulted. It is a rape. But I'm just like, I remember him Googling if sexual humping, non-consensual humping is rape, which is not funny, actually. It's like...
Yeah, it's...
Also, but how he also just, like, deals with it is just like, oh. it's so crazy to...
He becomes a woman.
Yeah.
And that's
in such a... like, I don't know if I don't... firstly, Gat's situation with the girl that he pivots to feel safe, obviously.
With the white woman?
His way. Yeah, with the white woman.
Yeah.
I don't... Personally, I wouldn't. I think she was angry because he was gay, and I think that's a lot of that's often the stance of cishet women around men or men who could be even slightly you know, fluid. It's you're gay, and you know, my issue is not with him being gay. I actually wouldn't even mind having someone who identified as gay sleeping with me. It's it's for me the lying, the using me as an experiment
to
ease your pain or whatever. Like, that's fucked up.
Yeah,
for me.
It was you see that part for me as well. And because for me this thing about disclosing sexuality is also a little gray, a little fuzzy, and there still is, as you said, homophobia. If somebody says they're bi or they are questioning, then it's like, oh, you're gay, and there's this whole thing that happens. But I think because, he just kind of used her as a body, but then it's conflicting because she was also fetishizing him and using him.
Absolutely.
Archer playing rap music while they were having sex, just being really weird.
And constantly going on about how black guys this, black guys that, into black guys, and
what are you doing? But then even then it's weird because the way they used white women in the show is interesting as well, because Theo, who we meet as this woman who runs a support group for rape survivors. And then we have a flashback to high school and the Alliance, and Theo, you know, she has this whole thing with her parents, but she's sleeping with one of the black students in high school. And he's now also just taking pictures of her while they're having sex without her consent. Also a violation of that is bad.
100%. And it's like, is like what a lot of guys do. Hey, like a lot of black men do this shit,
and it's just like
record and take pictures of women doing sex.
You need to tell someone and ask for their permission anyway. So he takes pictures,
whatever happens.
He's like, give me money. They have a whole tussle about it, and then he gives her money. She ends up chucking his phone, and then when she gets to class, homegirl goes to the bathroom, she makes herself bleed, someone sees, and they're like, hey, this girl, what's up with her? And then she says that he raped her and he assaulted her,
and
the whole thing escalates, and now he's in trouble. And for me, it's two things. It's the way that she felt like she would be taken seriously if it escalated to rape, instead of just, he took pictures of me, because she knew that it would be like, but what are you doing? So there's women having to escalate situations, but there's also the fact that, you know, his friends, like the guy's friend, was sent the picture, and he knew that, and he was just like, yeah, I'm not going to do anything. And it was Arabella who ended up going to the principal to get him exonerated. But everybody forgot that he took pictures of all these girls. People just forgot about that. And also black women to the rescue, hey, again.
Oh, this is what annoys me, you know, to the, like, there, you know, but I mean, like, I guess you could give them the benefit of the doubt of being teenagers, but it's still choices, and it's growing up in a world where somehow black women are supposed to just like cape for black men and defend black men, but also black men hardly ever choose black women, you know, or will defend black women. So it's these lessons that they learn as young people, that it's about blackness, and it's almost like black women would take on the black struggle.
Yes.
You know, the whole, when you think of a lot of like I remember the whole Black Panther movement and a lot of movies around that movement, it's black women, it's you know, it's Angela Davis. It's, you know, it's these black women who are at the forefront of the black race struggle, the civil rights movement. But it's like,
But then when
Liz just will throw black women under the bus. That's
It's almost like there's a clown filter that goes on.
Hey, Baba.
Like even Black Lives Matter was started by black women. You know, that whole movement.
Listen to that.
Black women, and then black women, when they were, you know, when they suffered from police brutality, black women's names weren't hashtags as much. Black women were forgotten.
Weren't hashtags.
And then say her name became a thing as well. And it's just weird. There's just a Popeye filter, man. And it's just kind of, it's just sad because people are scammers. Even Theo was a scammer because why are you starting a support group when you lied?
Like, why did she do that? I don't understand why. Because
she raped Blake.
When I went back to it, I realized she actually confessed to Arabella that she'd used her because, you know, if they get people of color onto the team.
Well, what was that? That was crazy.
I mean, I want to believe definitely whites are scammers. But I she comes through for Theo, for Arabella. Hey, even in the end with the rape, with how they imagine the end to be. But it's like, what's going on there? Like, there's a sense that, and she only confessed to Arabella after at Terry's party when black people were going on, when the black friends were going on about how trash white people are. She only felt bad. You know, but it's like, sorry, it's the whole thing around what is happening with Black Lives Matter today with white people, you know, fighting now, taking on the cause. It's like, sorry is just not good enough. You know, Theo and Karen and Jess, it's just
actually
confessing that you thought about doing this and that is just not good enough, you know?
Yeah, no.
You're a scammer.
She needs to do better. I was actually quite annoyed. Like, I was really annoyed with her. Because, again, it was a thing of someone being a hero and also a villain. Because she was
a
villain.
A lot of that. A lot of that goes on. Like, the hero, everyone villain.
Even Arabella was a hero, you know, or whatever. But then she was a villain to Kwame, locking him. Like, how do you lock someone in a room? How do you lock two people in a room together? What,
you know, that's, man, so
Badala, what are you doing?
You know, and then what are you doing?
Of it like a joke. No. Yeah.
Just the lack of, you know, the tone deafness in that, like just the safety tone deafness, like generally. It's not even about man, woman, gender. It's like safety, Jay.
Yeah, because
where are you in that chat, girl, to do that, you know?
But like, she was just going on and on about,
you know,
because there was a phase where she was calling out everybody on the
internet, the internet,
but she did not call herself out. She wasn't like Jada bringing herself to her own red table.
So interesting. You should actually pivot to social media, because there is a role that social media plays in, you know, I know a lot of shows are doing it these days, just like plugging in our social media behavior, or, you know, behavior on the internet, online. What do you think about that? Like, was that because it was also very much linked to her therapy.
Yeah.
You know, how she in the one scene talks to her therapist and is going on about how she's, you know, it's her duty to call people out on social media. And how the therapist is like, how about you leave that place?
You know what? I will say it's a hard place to leave. Yeah. I mean, I left. I took
good old SM
social media break. WhatsApp, Instagram, Twitter.
Yeah,
and that's a good one. I was just like, oh my gosh, who am I? What are you? You know, you're so used to scrolling through timelines and hearing about everyone's opinion and seeing what everyone is doing, that it was just me and my things. And I was like, this is also okay. Like, it's actually fine. And I think social media, I love that they showed that it can swallow you. Because she got so lost in trying to fight everyone's cause that she forgot which way was up. And she didn't know what to do. But I also think that it's life imitating art. And I mean, some people use social media as a facade, other people use it as an extension of themselves. And there are a whole bunch of other conversations to do with social media. Even if you think of Black Mirror and that episode where it was centered around social media likes and how you then...
Oh, yes, yes, brilliant. Yes.
I forget what it's called.
Brilliant.
The
one with the Uber...
Yeah, it was the Uber, the housing. Rating. You could literally, you couldn't do anything if you didn't have a certain rating.
Yeah.
If you so everyone would rate one another. And then the job that you have, where that you where you live, and then the main character wanted, is it called Nosedive? Something like that. But
probably, I would not remember the name.
Yeah, so the character wants to live in this apartment, but she doesn't have a 4.6 or whatever rating.
Oh yes, yes. So
she tries to get the rating, and then
gosh, Black Mirror.
Everything just definitely goes worth wrong. A rewatch. Everything goes wrong, and it's just a mess. But that's
like of because show, the
yeah, because but then Black Mirror shows because it's in the future, but not really, and they always kind of play around the idea of like, if we take three more steps, this is where we can end up.
This
because
is it. It
wasn't that far-fetched because we already do rate each other.
Absolutely.
People like your posts. People are obsessed with, you know, like it's already the whole thing. And
yeah,
it's not that much.
And I mean, I think like social media is, I think you, there's a, definitely a community.
And you learn
a lot. There's a sense of community in social media because, you know, we aren't as... especially with this pandemic, like we just don't have our people with us, and you almost feel like social media is where you can find community.
Absolutely.
But you know, when dealing with like stuff, again, noise, you know, and I really do believe like there's something to be said about the fact that, you know, like social media is, it's amazing. It's democratized a lot of things, and it's that word, and it's like it's really been so important for so many things, but the noise factor of it is actually quite mentally debilitating, and it's not good when you are trying to, I don't know. You've got to give social media a break when you are going through something.
You're definitely right, because I mean, there have been a lot of studies that have proved that people's level of depression has spiked from extended use of social media. And I think they even rated which apps spike the highest levels of depression. Instagram came out tops.
Well, look at that.
Looking at that, because obviously you can see Ubabes is in Greece. And you're and like, you know, you can see this excessive opulence, and it feels like people are always having nice times and doing things in your face. So it definitely spikes the highest level of depression, which is also
thing. Instagram is that girl, hey?
It is that girl. But you know, it's just definitely. Each social media thing has its own purpose.
Right?
Okay, it's, though,
exactly.
They used Grindr. Through Kwame, they used Grindr a lot. But it felt like for me that the way that he ended up, you know, finding a partner through the app that wanted to cook him 7 colors and eat it instead of just doing a hookup. And as he found intimacy, for me, I don't know, a part of me feels like they might have shamed his sexual freedom a little bit with the way
he
ended up in a very steady
situation after a
situation of domesticity when that was not always his vibe.
I think that's such a sharp take, like a hot insight, you know, because on one end, showing sexual freedom or meaning the intention to say, oh, it's okay to be sexually casual and free, you know, it's okay, it's fluidity is okay, and you shouldn't feel ashamed of that, but then him getting raped as a result of that kind of lifestyle is, you know,
kind of like,
or just painting, just painting that picture of okay, he gets raped as a result in the show of his sexual fluidity is a little bit it's a little, I wouldn't say homophobic, I don't know, there's a bit of a shaming here, like you were saying.
yeah,
that's it, going on.
It felt weird, especially because, I mean, I did like the way that they explored with the new partner. I think his name was Tyrone. Callum.
Yeah. I'm sorry. Tyrone cooking seven colors and wanting hugs.
Yeah, and you know what? But for me, I like that they played with the idea of intimacy. What is intimate? Why can you have sex with someone, but you feel uncomfortable giving them a hug?
Right.
You know? And it's just like how we, and they, all these rules that people have, like if you kiss someone, then it's too intimate. If you, but you'll put your body parts together. I don't know. Like they're all these weird,
I mean,
there are all these weird things that people have. And like, even the way people define hooking up is different. Like,
right. I can never understand that. I literally am to this day on the fence about, like, what do we mean by hook up?
People mean different things. People mean different things, and that's what's weird.
Yeah.
So, like, how do you define intimacy? And clearly people define it in different ways. Because some people find intimacy is being more immersed with someone, you know, and sharing thoughts and talking. But then for other people, being intimate is, like, being naked, literally, and doing things. I don't know.
But it's funny, like with Kwame, that it almost seems like there is a, with his, you know, with his sexual freedom, whatever, his grinder finder lifestyle, he's not vulnerable and he's not intimate. And yet he's engaging in such, you know, like exposing acts with absolute strangers, you know, but there is just, you know, there's, he seems vulnerable. He seems like there's, he is a vulnerable figure, but like he himself does not open up that way. He's quite guarded and closed and almost this like sad boy's image. Yeah, he's actually quite hot. You know?
Sad boy.
But
he's sad boy vibes though. I will agree.
Yeah, he definitely is screaming sad boy vibes. But then the intimacy, it's just very interesting that, you know, he could be that guy but also lacking in the intimacy and the vulnerability side of it. It's just in the last episode, the last episode is quite
roller coaster.
What did you think of the last episode?
I think so many things. It made me laugh, it made me scream, it made me cry. It was just, it was like an entire roller coaster. Apart from
roller coaster,
loved that. I think you said that it was kind of like the Bandersnatch Black Mirror episode.
Yes, that whole
like choose your reality, but
choosing an ending. Yeah,
choose an ending. But I think more than anything, I like that they left it up to our interpretation, but they also played with the idea of like, what is the resolve? Yes, you get raped.
What is the resolve?
And you suffer through trauma, whatever trauma it is, what resolve would you be satisfied with? Is it the person dying? Is it, like, what is it? And it's so, like, what is the idea of closure after something like that happens, you know? And she's trying to find her way through everything. And it's almost as if trauma can never end.
Yeah.
Trauma just doesn't end. And that was kind of what I got. So I got that she just kind of let it all go. And that was her way of, getting past it, was
closing,
trying to let it go, because it will never be okay. And sometimes justice is just not served.
And right. And that for me is what was, that's for me what I was left, like that left a bad taste in my mouth, which just is the thing that leaves a bad taste in my mouth about society, is that rape survivors have to find their own healing and their own justice. Mm. You know, like society is not helpful. The system is not helpful in that. Like sometimes if, you know, a rape victim, a survivor is lucky to be a survivor, because a lot of people die, you know, and it's like sometimes that is the reality of this kind of violence as well, of this kind of culture that we live in, is that women die at the hands of sexual violence. And alternatively, the system can't help you, so you have to find a resolve. You have to find your own healing. And it was interesting that the rapist scenario where she brings the rapist back home.
Oh.
On the one end, puts him.
What?
So much symbolism also, you know, just like putting the rapist under the bed after killing him.
Yeah. And even that first version. How she always put things under the bed and how we compact.
Yes, exactly. All her issues. And she completely forgets. She completely forgets.
Because she found what? Like a scan from an.
Yeah, like an abortion. And she had completely.
Because we've been.
And it just also.
Your fault to compartmentalize. So you just don't deal with
yes.
it.
Yes. The PTSD, bruh. Like your mind blocks the shit out so you can cope. And it just makes you wonder how much trauma do women have to go through? Like, how much trauma is in the body that you actually are also, like, that you are not conscious of, you know?
The body is literally a site for trauma. And it's, for me, it's always very jarring that, like, especially in South Africa, at best, we've been sexually harassed, at best.
Man, oh man.
Everyone has, I mean, more often than not, people have also experienced the worst, but it's just like, what do we do with that? And your brain, also your brain just blocking things out as a form of self-preservation is wild.
It's wild.
It's like,
because that's also, it's also not.
We're just gonna block it out for you. That's fine.
It's also not foolproof. It's how your body and your brain tries to protect you but fails almost.
Yeah, because
like, it comes back.
But also random, like you won't get the whole picture. It's not like you can't watch the movie again. It will give
you can't.
And then because even in the show, I love the way that they showed that, like you said, just snippets and flashbacks. And then you kind of have to piece everything together and you don't know what is real.
You know? And what happened to you?
What happened?
What happened to you? Hey? The disconnection between you, Jay. You are just this severed. It's like, yo, she does it so well. She does it so well. And it's just heartbreaking. It's heartbreaking in the end. When she's, it's almost like in the end there with the rapist in the bed, after she has sex with the rapist, it's almost like that's a version, that's consent's version, where if you had just asked to have sex with me, maybe I would have had sex with you, maybe we would have, if there is a world in which you can see, you know, try ask a woman and maybe you can have sex with a woman instead of stealing sex from her,
but then also the version where they kind of force sympathy and that, oh no, he was in jail and bad things happened to him. Like,
yuck,
you see, I don't know, I don't want to feel sympathy for you.
I don't want to feel sympathy for this person.
I don't know,
but like, it almost, oh, I don't want to feel sympathy. What?
She tried to make everyone human.
Yeah, she did. She did.
Even Terry. Ugh, Terry. Can you tell I don't like Terry? She got away.
Can you tell? Because
she got away with being a
she got away with murder. Yo, a very bad friend. A very bad friend. But also, interestingly enough, the trans storyline. Person that she then ends up dating.
You know, someone on social media said that they felt like they used the trans character as a lesson for heteros. And I was like, yikes, I get that. Because it was one of those, like, don't judge a book by its cover, you know? And then,
And it's like, oh, I'm not going to not date you because you're trans.
Yeah.
I'm going to now force this. I mean, it's just, it's weird. It's
date you now that you're, I don't know.
She didn't develop. But also it's like with trans and queer storylines, it's very, you really need to bring
in
trans and queer people into the room, you know, because you can never, like it's representation. You can never tell their story or that story yourself, you know?
This is something to be said about bringing people into the room, because she directed and produced the whole thing and, you know, turned out brilliantly with her. I think she said she had 191 drafts. And
what do you think about that?
The drafts.
Her writing. Her writing the whole thing,
you know,
by herself.
You know what?
It's a little Tyler Perry-esque.
I thought of Tyler Perry, but because she executed it so well.
So well.
And because for me, I think the difference is that it was specific to her.
Yeah, it was her story.
It was her story, you know? And where there were gaps, you know, with queer characters, where it was like, there she could have consulted. So the moments where
absolutely
were moments where she should have, like, gotten more outside help. But for the most part, it was her story. Oh, Tyler Perry, on the other hand.
On as the other hand, brothers.
To have a show called Sisters. But he's all the sisters. And he writes the sisters. And I'm just...
Tyler Perry is some kind of girl.
To write, I can't believe I used girl casually. Anyway, how do you have the girl?
The girl!
I literally feel like I'm in a soapy saying, how do you have the girl? Like,
I know. The girl!
The girl, yeah. So he had the girl. He just continues to write black women in such a crazy way.
In such a wildly problematic, disgusting way.
Sort of Tyler Perry, because I need to.
Yeah, no, I know, absolutely. No, without a doubt.
Can you imagine? Absolutely. It's like, Quinta, if you cheat on your loving, sometimes forgetful black man, you're going to get AIDS. Like temptation. Temptation. That's what happens when you cheat. You get AIDS. Aha. Wild, wild. But back to I May Destroy You.
Listen, Tyler Perry is a case study. Okay. Rating it.
Yes.
Do black women pander to even the slightest stereotype? I would say no.
No.
I don't see a lot of stereotyping in this. I see realness. And also the whole black women or black people in the UK and their lineages from Africa. Mm-hmm. And there's also a lot of pigeon... and patois and there's just a there's a lot of that which I appreciate, so it's a full mark on that. Is there at least one strong relationship between black women? Yes. Terry and Arabella are good friends. how are different types of black women and bodies represented in relation to one another? This again is, you know, I mean, I guess the only fuller bodied woman is Theo, and she's white, and
there's also hated her.
You know, a lot of series have a long way to go with fat phobia. There's a lot of fat phobia out there, or just fat disavowal. There's just erasure, you know?
Visual language, you know?
Yeah.
And then as for where were they Africans and queers? Check and check.
Yeah, they were. So, I mean, I guess I would give this, I'm going to give it a fries, guys. You know, I think it's intersectional. I think it does the work. How would you rate it?
Okay, so you basically went through everything. So they definitely don't pander to stereotypes, I don't feel. There's a strong relationship. Yes, check. You know, there are Africans within the diaspora. We love to see it, especially in Terry's birthday. That was a beautiful thing.
Absolutely. Love it.
Are they queers? Yes, they centered Kwame. Still need a little bit of work of that, but yes. Mm. And then are women, black women given the space to express a full range of emotion? Yes. Because Arabella just went through all of the things.
Yeah.
And
the whole gamut.
The whole thing. So I would give it fries. Yeah. Getting fries.
We got fries out of you.
You got fries out of me, Michaela Cole. You did. Because she's also a versatile hand doing physical comedy. And now we're doing comedy drama.
Right.
So I love to see it. Also, she said no to Netflix. Because they didn't want to give her check. And I love to see that as well.
Really?
Yeah. Netflix.
HBO is really...
her monies, and she said no, and then took it to BBC and HBO. So good for her.
Yeah, HBO is proving to be quite the place for new voices, or you know,
for black
voices in the marginal lines.
Yeah, so I would give it fries, not McDonald's fries. No. It's better than McDonald's fries. I would give it Steers. Black, nice.
Whoa!
It was good.
Wow.
I was captivated genuinely every single episode.
Absolutely.
And they proved that you can give a good 30-minute episode and that they do not have to be fillers. I'm not subtweeting anything.
Right.
I don't feel subtweeted, then that's on them. But like, you can do a lot in 30 minutes. No, like, you know.
You can.
It was good. And it made me see so many things. And so few shows can do that. So right. I honestly loved it. I want to say it's like very high up on one of the best shows of this year, personally.
Yeah, actually, it really is. I was actually saying to someone that it for me, reminds me of Pose in the theme that isn't spoken about, and it's something that we need to talk about. It's represented by the person who's actually, you know, like the survivors. So with Pose, it's that whole it's trans, it's queerness, it's the balls, it's that 80s lifestyle. With Pose, it's consent, it's an important topic subject. And it's represented by the people who have experienced it. So it's really, it's actually quite on top.
Which is what we mean when we say representation, you know?
Right.
Have
the
some
people need to speak for themselves.
Exactly. Not with you as a white savior, whatever. Fries. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Okay, last thing. What is the content you signed up for before we go?
Before we hit the road, it's quite contentious. I was going to say DMX and Snoop's versus, but I'm actually going to give it to something that I saw today, Jaguar Wright. I don't know if you know Jaguar Wright. She's like a singer songstress from like the States around, like she's in the era of like the Roots and
does she sing or does she whisper?
No, she sings. She's old school.
That's great.
Yeah. She's not like that.
Doesn't sing in cursive.
She's not a Claudio, whatever the hell her name is. Sabrina, yeah. So she was calling out, it's wild, Peter. Yo, the cancellation of our faves. In this era, like, she was calling out Common, The Roots, Talib Kweli, Jill Scott, Erykah Badu on a whole lot of mess that they did back when, you know. She's actually really talking about Malik B, who was part of the whole
he was a founding member of The Roots that he
yes and how I haven't watched the whole Instagram video, which is why it's still my content, because I just want to figure out what the story is around that. But she calls out Common on being quite fucky, and a bit of a sexual assault issue around Common, and it's just like, Batung, hey,
you know what? Wait a minute. I remember somebody saying when the story about Russell Simmons came out,
like,
it was like, if we do a Me Too for the music industry, there will be nothing.
Oh, the music industry, dude.
Nothing left to listen to. And I said, wow. So maybe the day is coming. I'm going to check that out.
Yeah, please do. What's your content?
My content is Terrell and Song Association. Just the perfect.
Terrell.
And he's back for season 4. Imagine season 4.
Wow, and guys. I didn't even know about Terrell until you told me this year.
Literally, like, he's amazing. So he had Ryan Destiny on as a guest. And another YouTuber, I'm forgetting his name now. But it was so great, you know, and he's such a lovely, bubbly person, and it was so fun to watch, and I needed that joy. And I also shout out to Ryan Destiny. I love Ryan Destiny. Because I used to watch Star, and like, she's such a great model. gorgeous. And yeah. music coming out or whatever. But it was just nice to see like a consistent king of content come back for another season and just to bring Black joy. I really enjoyed Terrell.
Yeah. Yes. I watched the one episode he had with what's her name, man? My queen, Layla Hathaway. Oh, you know, every time I just think of Layla Hathaway, I just get chills.
My goodness.
Yeah.
I mean, very few people can harmonize with their own voice. Hello.
Hello.
Yo.
Hello. Hello. Coco. Like.
Coco. You know, we love her. No, but I really do appreciate that he only brings singers who can actually sing, you know.
He's clearly himself a huge fan of music.
Yeah, he made a whole album. He got everyone who has been on the show to just record the album.
But yeah, that's been us.
Time to say goodbye. Yeah.
All right, let me.
That was Pavarotti or some shit. He killed that. That was amazing.
Yeah, Pavarotti.
Man, Pavarotti was
the only
opera singer kind of, everybody loved.
I know.
And their mama loved.
Please follow us on our social platforms.
Thank you so much. That is at Black Staring. Staring is spelled with one E. Two R's on Instagram and Twitter. No Facebook because parental figures being there just made that a little bit weird. Thank you for joining us.
Rate us positively, please, on Apple. And yeah, and that's it. That's it, pretty much.
Say good things. Tell your friends. Have a beautiful week.
Have a beautiful week and a beautiful year. Happy New Year. Bye-bye.
Compliments of the season.